Everybody wake up.
Time to wake up. Time to start the day. Wake up late with Dougie. He is the only
wake
way.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Everybody.
Wake up late.
Wake up.
It's late. Time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie.
It's time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. What rhymes with Dougie? He's just so funny.
It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Live from Danger Studios. Coral Springs, and now you know.
We're the hottest show in the world.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
I said 1, 2, 3.
Everybody wake up.
Live from Danger Studios in Coral Springs, Florida. It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Starring Dougie Almeida. Now. Let's start the show.
Welcome to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. I'm Dougie Almeida. I'm joined today in the studios by Talia Brahms.
Oh, great to be back, guys.
Welcome back. And of course, in our Atlanta studios, John Levine.
It's a very sad city to be in today.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Very, you know, very somber.
Especially because how the game was going. It was, yeah. I mean, no one would have bet they would have won.
No. No. Yeah. So it's, leading up to this week, every time you went into a store and you checked out or something, you'd be like, all right, go Falcons. You know, it was like, everybody was excited and energetic about it. This morning I went out to go grocery shopping. It was like a fucking funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah. They really dropped the ball, as they'd say.
It's like if you study for a test or something in school and you work for weeks at it and you studied every night and you had tutoring sessions and all this stuff. And then the idiot kid gets the A. He gets like a higher grade than you. That's like what the game felt like. Like they were kicking ass and doing so well, and then last minute, you know.
Well, it really wasn't last minute. It was the whole second half. They just fell apart.
I mean, I consider this last minute.
Yeah. Well, it was in the beginning, I thought, wow, this isn't even going to be close. You thought it was going to be a blowout.
Yeah.
You know, right off the bat, and then you're like, oh, I wanted a game. I wanted a game out of it, and at least we got a game out of it.
Oh, we definitely did. It was super exciting. I mean, no doubt about that. It was just the fact that, first of all, you can never bet against the Patriots because they do that shit all the time. And Atlanta just couldn't do anything in the second half. And then, you get that catch by Edelman, that kind of was like on somebody's leg, and then he, let go of it and then grabbed it and never touched the ground. I mean, you get a
amazing
break like that. And
that was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen that happen a couple times in the last few months. I think a couple times this season where the ball just didn't hit the ground, but it should have.
Yeah.
Even when they put it in slow motion, I still couldn't believe what was going on.
Yeah, that was a great call by those refs,
Yeah, it was certainly amazing. And they even talked about it, last night. It was like the David Tyree catch on his helmet, when the Giants played in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. I mean, sometimes you just get those types of plays and they just go your way and, they just go your way.
Yeah, and the worst part though is whenever you lose a big match or something, it's heartbreaking. You know what I mean? Like I still think about losing the state finals in high school, state championships, and penalty kicks, and it hurts that way. But it doesn't hurt when I know that, for example, we played real hard. It came down to a penalty kicks, so overtime, blah blah blah, and I saved a couple. You know what I mean? I was like, but it still hurts. But to be one of those guys who fucked up, like the guy who got called with the holding call, when the Falcons were basically moving downfield, just gonna get a field goal and put it out of reach, and then that happens,
Dante Freeman missed the block, and that was the sack on Matt Ryan. I mean, you can go back and kind of pinpoint. But the other side of it is, though, Tom Brady's really good. The Patriots are really good at stuff like that. I mean, they were in the Super Bowl. They deserve to be there because they're a really good team. So, did the Falcons fall apart? Yeah, they did. They certainly didn't play the second half like they played the first. But, you also have to give credit to the Patriots because they're just a really good team.
I mean, yeah, they're in the Super Bowl all the time, I feel like.
Right.
So there's that's no coincidence.
Five championships for Tom Brady, any quarterback ever had.
Is he not the luckiest person on the planet? Like, just,
he's the man.
I hate people like that just have everything.
Yeah, but he works hard at it. I mean, you can't take that away from him. I mean, he's very dedicated to it.
Yeah, it's not like he's like, you know, he got somewhere because of something, you know. I mean, you know what I mean? He's like he's the man.
No,
you know?
I guess.
Yeah.
Tell
you
still
handsome. Yeah,
she's
still.
He's just perfect. Everything.
You're just so good looking and athletically gifted. I'm sure your cock is huge.
Yeah, and Giselle and the perfect house and kids and just, I don't know. It's too much.
Well, congratulations to the Patriots.
Yes, of course. Congratulations.
It's funny how you're saying that people in Atlanta must be just because it's one thing if they came out and got blown out because then they'd be like, oh, right. You know, but to feel like you had it in your hands. And to lose like that's the worst part of a game like that because you know when you feel like it's and again like you've been being in those situations like when you're in it or you're in the game and and then you lose you're like oh you know whatever you feel like oh we fought you know we did good but to be ahead you know what
like
I mean
25
yeah to be ahead and you know to be like that and all of a sudden to lose it that's agonizing it's like, because everybody's going to look at each other. Everybody's, you know what I mean? You can't help but like look at, you know, and everybody's like, what the fuck, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, a lot of people on Facebook have compared this to the election. You know, every comic out there on Facebook has posted, you know, stuff like this is how Hillary felt and blah, blah, blah. Everybody's got their own jokes, you know, which I didn't, you know, as much as I'm, you know, I didn't see it. I didn't see the comparison because, you know, I like most of Americans, I'm trying to put that election behind me at this point. You know, let's move on. Although I will say this, mentioning other comics, Catherine Maloney is a comic out of Tampa. You know, I met her a couple times here, and very nice to her, but she posted that, I guess, today, the Democrats are basically going through a 24-hour thing.
Yeah.
Where they're just reviewing different people that could be the education
for
secretary.
Betty,
you know,
or Betsy.
DeVos, Davos, whatever her name is.
Yeah, Betsy DeVos.
Mm-hmm. DeVos. And, you know, listen, I didn't research this woman. I don't know her. She obviously must have some credentials to be considered. This, you know, even though she's never taught, I guess that's some of the things people are saying. She's never actually taught. She's
never gone to public school. She didn't go to public school.
Yeah. So
and her kids aren't even in public school, and she's going to be the head of public schools.
Well, I know nothing about her, but I know her reactions and like her responses to stuff are just so out of whack when you actually like listen
really?
To her speak. I don't know her background or her history.
And she's a Jesus freak. Like she's her and her husband have been quoted saying like we're trying to bring back the kingdom of God to this country. I mean, like things like that.
Yeah.
You know,
well.
Which is.
Well, you know how John feels about that, but
But when it comes to public education, I mean that doesn't have a place there. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, actually, you know,
there's a place, just not public schools across the country.
No, I think there's a place in all schools if you don't sit there and preach your particular religion, but if you preach the positive products of it, you know, whether it's be good to your fellow man and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's the thing. I think from the outside, some douchebags will make comments about it, thinking that the person doesn't do it, when in fact, sometimes professionals can differentiate and not labeling the religion, but just sticking to that part of it.
Well, that's why you teach values.
The problem is when you stop teaching things like evolution in science class and teach creationism. That's the problem.
Is that one of the things she suggested that we shouldn't teach it?
That's the one thing that she backs of putting like creationism in the science textbooks, you know, to show that, you know, this is, you know, the competing theory or something.
Well, it should
like that,
be, don't you think? It is a theory theory. It's a theory.
It's got no scientific backing.
It doesn't matter. It's a theory. You said it. Now, whatever you want to say, it's a theory. It like anything else. There's written scriptures, there's writings from thousands of years back that basically devoted to religion. So to say that, you know, you ever see that parents should teach their kids religion, all that, I buy that. But to say that, you know, that there shouldn't be some sort of, listen, there is science, there's evolution, there's all this thing like Darwin of creation, blah, blah, blah. And then there's also the feeling of this. Because here's the thing, like I kind of find, I kind of blend in between the two. Like I thought, okay, you know, I think God, you know, I believe in a God. I believe in there's a primal mover. I think there's got to be some sort of, something behind it all in a sense. You know, there's got to be some, that's what I believe. And to say, you know, to say that you can't, to believe just in one or the other is silly. I think, why wouldn't you believe that, you know, these things were created? You know,
right.
Do I believe that all of a sudden a man appeared on Earth? No, I don't. But I think that's a symbolism to say that, you know. So I think by eliminating it, I think that it's
But Dougie, that's the way you feel. The problem is that those are two competing theories that are they're incompatible with each other.
Right. So why not? Why not have them? Why not have them both be thrown out? Let people come up with their own opinion of
because
it.
Because we're talking about children. We're not talking about adults.
Well, you're talking about children that have parents that could say, "This is a story I learned in school." This
and
is
they can say that, and they can say that to them. But in school, we teach science.
Well, yes, and that's I believe exactly what you believe, Doug. Where it's like, I think that. I believe in science as far back as it can go, but then Big Bang, that one little atom that exploded or whatever, there is a higher power behind that. That's what I believe. But when it comes to, you know, creationism, that's not science. That's an idea. And like in science, evolution, you can explain.
If you're going to prove in a lab. There's certain science things you can prove, but you can't. Nobody has proven evolution, but you cannot prove the beginning. No one can prove what started it.
Creationism is in science.
The theory of evolution refers to the theory that everything on this planet evolved into what it is today. That's the theory of evolution. Evolution itself is not in question. You can do evolution in a lab with fruit flies.
We understand
so,
that.
So that's not in question.
But when you come into when you get into the subject of how things began, you know, evolution is how things have transpired. Evolution is a theory that shows where we've come from, but it doesn't say where we got, how we got here. In other words, how things got here. So to say in a textbook or in science that I don't find it that hard-fetched that, listen, there's a belief of this, and then there's science. The science proves this. You know, religion believes this. So on that subject,
why don't you teach how the Hindus believe how Earth was created?
I think it should be. Why are you picking one religion?
I have not picked one.
I didn't say just one. Most liberals assume that what I'm saying, and you think they know what I'm saying. I'm saying that a religious belief, a religion of some sort of creationism, whatever it is. That those things should be thrown in there. Look, these are the things mainstream.
All of them.
No, not every single one of them. But let's just say the top two or three. Like there are some beliefs of this, and then there's science.
What's the top two or three? I mean, how do you determine that?
Well, I would say the top two or three are based on followers in the globe. I would base on the followers of the globe. So I'm not gonna expect the Coptic religion that believes in smoke and marijuana should be taught in the textbooks. Let's not get ridiculous, John. Let's just stick to point. Don't get sidetracked like you always get fucking sidetracked with me. My point is, I'm saying if I am not against the fact that somewhere in the textbook that there should be a reference to it. It shouldn't say one is different than the other, better than the other. One isn't not in science, but in schools. We're talking about in schools. We're not just talking about in science textbooks.
They want to teach that in a religion class? Fine. That's where it belongs. Hey, we're going to talk about the religion and how it came about and the teachings of religion. That's in religion class. In science, it has absolutely no place, and you can argue all you want. It has no place.
I think it's good that hey, in science, this is what science brings, and it's myth and magic. I can't fucking finish your thought, John. Are you going to keep talking over me? So in science class, if they say, look, this is what science says, right? In contrast to what this belief is, so to say it, I think it's good to show it out there because then kids will feel more comfortable asking their parents about it or maybe questioning the religious aspect of it as opposed to ignoring it, and saying, oh, well, my parents teach me is one thing, but I'm learning in school is another. It differentiates that. Like to say the school should at least make mention to it, not to have a whole curriculum behind it, but the scientific creation, how everything started, this is what the science says.
There's no evidence of that entire story.
There's no evidence of either of the theories when it comes to how things really started. The Big Bang theory is not true at all.
The only thing you have is a story. You have a story that was written in a book by people who thought the Earth was flat. That does not belong anywhere near a science textbook or a science class. And there's absolutely no argument you can make that's going to tell me that that's the truth because there isn't an argument about it. You're not going to teach a myth in a science class.
John, you just because you feel the way you feel about religion,
it's not just me, Doug.
Your argument right now is all about that because you're using verbiage which is saying exactly how you feel.
Because our founding fathers put in a separation of church and state, and
I agree with that. That's not the point. My point is that
well, outside of both of those things, like taking a step back from both of your viewpoints, that's just one aspect where science and religion collide. So now everything else, how would you also include religion in the science class? Like, oh yeah, well, whales eat kelp, except for that one time it ate a man named Jonah. But we'll get to that later.
I think that's ridiculous. What I'm saying is, when it comes to how things started, when I think how it should be pointed out, like, look, like in anything, there's a
story in your book true, but the Jonah and the whale isn't.
I'm not going over just the stories.
It would certainly clash with other scientific.
I would just
teachings.
Say that, look, this is what was believed, and this is science. You know, in order to, you know, order class, to, you know, whatever
nonsense.
I'm saying that in science, I should point out that those are two nope. theories. One's a theory, one's scientific.
In science class, they should talk about science.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing.
It's called science for a reason.
Yeah,
for a reason.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I think that's, if people get that, at least they'll say okay, and they'll, whatever way they go, they'll go, because that's the freedom of thought. That person can make their own decisions.
You're talking about a fifth grader.
And I mean, you could really relate this to anything. Like in Spanish, they teach Castilian, which is the Spaniard way of speaking, because it's proper.
Right.
By whose terms is it proper? In South Florida, that's not the way you speak at all, because everyone here is from the islands.
Well, it is so, proper. It is proper because from, if you think about it, the lineage, like, you know, Spain, the people that speak Spanish that live in South America and Central America only speak Spanish because the conquistadors came and they learned the language from them. Then from there, derived from that, their versions of it. So
that is
the original point of the language.
Yeah, and that's why it's in place. But right. Who's to say that that's proper or not? And that's just sort of the same thing with these classes. Like, how do you decide?
Well, that's what we're not doing. That's what John keeps saying. I'm not telling one's right or wrong or proper or anything.
No. When it comes to teaching proper Spanish, that's not made up. We know where proper Spanish came from. We know why Latin American people speak a different dialect of Spanish than the people that speak it in Spain. We know all of those things. None of that is not true.
John's point, like you just said,
of it is true.
But see, John's coming from any of it, and that's what science is based on.
John's
coming from an atheist point of view. So he's saying that it did not happen. So he doesn't want his kids
to
hear about
it. Prove to me God exists.
The sun's up. There's a burning star that somehow cannot be created by man. So there's got to be a supreme superior. There's got to be something more supreme than man.
You have no evidence of that.
I don't, but that's what the difference is. I have faith, and if faith is something,
faith. You have faith.
Yes,
faith is a belief. You have no evidence, and science is based on evidence.
I'm just saying it's what I feel. I don't need to define
the mic. You didn't even see me dropping.
I don't need to define. If something, that's the difference between it. Okay.
And that's the difference between science and religion. You just believe it.
Right. So that's why I'm trying to tell you. That's why I'm trying to tell you. I'm not. I don't think it's that bad to say, hey, there's this theory.
Yes, it is.
And this is the theory. And then from
this, it is bad.
John, shut the fuck up and let me finish what I'm saying.
I know what you're going to say.
You do?
You've been saying it.
Well,
and what I'm saying is that you cannot make an argument for why it belongs in a science class. You can't.
I think it belongs in a science class because this is what
science.
I would
is
say
based
up
on
until
evidence.
Up
science
until years. I would say
things.
A thousand.
Science is based on truth.
John's missing
religion
my fucking
is
point.
None of those
John
things.
Is missing my point. I'm saying if I'm learning science and I want to be scientific, I want to know that is what. Listen, over thousands and thousands of years, this is what was believed. But science doesn't believe this because of this.
Science has disproved all of it.
That is why that. Again, don't keep pushing your fucking atheist beliefs on me, John, okay? I don't want to hear it. I don't give a fuck about it. You think what you want to think. I'll think what I want to think. I'm trying to make another point. My point is that if I'm going
to
be a scientist, yes, you are, John. Yes, you are. You're saying it didn't happen. All right, you're saying none of this shit happened. Then you believe that. But I think things did happen. I think there are different. Your belief and my belief is different. We're talking about textbook. And I think that if I want my kid to understand science and I want my kid to be a good scientist, I think he should understand why he's doing science because this for thousands of years believed this, but now this is science. So this is why scientists think the way they do and how they think. It helps differentiate between a scientific thought and a belief or a theory. That's my point. See, it's not about being right about religion or not, which you can't get through your fucking thick skull that you think I'm saying. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that for scientists to be that much stronger about it, it's better for a scientist or where they develop in school and in science why science is important. And that's the point that you keep missing because you're pushing your fucking atheist agenda with me.
Science class.
Because I think that if they said over thousands of years, this is the way it was believed to be, and that's how things started. Science didn't start at fucking 3000 BC when it was talking about this thing in a sense. So they had the religious theories, and then from religious theories developed then from science, you know, with the whole thing with fucking...
Science started with the Greeks and the Romans, which started well before right. Christianity.
But when it came down to it, the real battle was when fucking forgetting his name, the guy with the...
Jesus?
No, not Jesus. The guy who's considered to be an Illuminati that he had to hide from the fucking the Roman Catholic Church because he had his own feelings of science and things like that about the human body.
John Paul?
No, forget it. I'm trying to think of a fucking guy's name now. Galileo. Or I don't remember. Was it Galileo? I'm trying to remember his name now. At any rate, so there was a point where religion and science became an issue, right? It was like you had to believe religion. So my point is that if you really want to teach science, it has a place in there because science kind of took over the religious beliefs. Like, in other words, in
history.
We've reached a time.
You want to teach that in history class, that's
yeah,
fine.
Well, I think it's good for the scientists to know that. Anybody's thinking
well,
about science.
Usually when people
what's
take
the purpose?
Science,
what's the purpose? What's the purpose of the science? And that's why, because if you're going to teach it, this is why people believe this, and this is how people had believed it. And this is the theory. And that's how it works.
So should you also teach like the Vikings and they believed in the different gods and the Norse gods and all that kind of stuff? Because that was believed for thousands of years too.
I'm talking about what started.
Point.
I'm not talking about the various gods.
Well,
I'm talking about. I'm not getting
it.
Now you're going to get. Now just take a religious course like you're talking about. Talking about
really
science.
Point,
what
though.
Started.
Why not teach? Why not teach all the different religions in science? If you
I just
want,
think you need to teach. I just think when it comes to that,
to
when it talks to creationism,
before they started doing
you
science,
could. If you want to, you could. If you want, you could even say that, and you could say, "Look, these people thought this. These are people that actually thought this. There was people that actually thought this. There was people that thought this."
Right. They
scientists
that in
feel.
Class.
You keep saying the same stupid fucking shit, but you ask me a point. You ask me a fucking question, John. I'm answering it, and then you're throwing more shit at me.
I'm
just let me answer the fucking.
Let me ask.
All right, I got you. I heard you say that 1,000 times already. Like you said to me.
So
what I'm saying is that I think that it's good to say, hey, this is the way it was thought, and this is what's thought, and this is the scientific belief, and they teach the science based on knowing how that was thought in the past. Anyway, moving on. So congratulations to the Patriots. I didn't get to see many of the commercials. Now there were some commercials. They didn't seem to be.
That's so fucking funny.
They didn't seem to be, you know, up to it. Like, all right, the first thing I have a question for was the 84 lumber commercial.
I didn't go online and look at the end of it. Did anybody?
I was cooking the entire time. So right. Sorry.
Well, you know, I didn't get it. I guess I saw. I seemed like a Hispanic woman of some sort with a daughter. And was going through, like, getting rides places and going places. And then the last part I seen is they're walking kind of, like, through, like, an open field area or
that's
area.
Right. It was pro-immigrant. That's all I
know. Is all it was? Yeah. Okay.
I didn't see it. I'm just saying that's what I heard.
Yeah, I didn't get the association with, you know, science was just trying to make a political point what the fuck what it had to do with 84 lumber.
Well, you can go watch the end of the commercial, and it should sort of clarify that for you. I mean, I didn't see it either, but, I mean, I saw the first part of the commercial, but I didn't see the end, so I really have no idea what it's about at all.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they get to a fence and they're shot dead, and then it ends with, you know, hashtag go Trump. I mean, who knows?
That'd be interesting, you know. Yeah, two
buy some 84 lumber.
A mom and a mother and her daughter, you know, excitingly trying to get their way to get into the country. And that's what I'm pointing. I'm like, they're showing this, like, hey, this is a great day. We're about to enter a country illegally. You know, I didn't get where they were going with it. And I guess I didn't see the end. The last
I didn't
commercial.
See it, but that's, I do know that it was pro immigration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it ended well for them, you can assume.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the one point about this whole immigration thing, and I get it, nobody wants to be held, and I definitely respect the fact that there's companies, like a lot of people on the technology side, they're trying to work things out so that these people can get through within the 120 days. And I think there's got to be stuff done. There's patients, there's people that obviously, you know, could get through the vetting process. I think that's happening anyway, and eventually happening. But the one thing that, you know, I don't get, and again, I when it comes to hypocrisy, I'm intolerant of it. And
oh, really?
Yeah, yes. And when it comes to, like, the one thing that it keeps eating at me is this fact that all these countries that are on the seven country ban, none of them will allow a Jewish person in the country. You know, and I'm just thinking about just that one little bit. You know what I mean? It's like, just that one point, that one fact, that any of these countries will not let somebody of a certain religious factor.
Well, what does that have to do with us?
Well, because I'm talking as Muslims. Like, they feel like this is not right. Like, you know what I mean? They're saying this is not right. So I just don't understand that in the countries that they're from, or these countries, that if they're going to completely ban somebody for their religion, that they're going to say that this isn't fair, this isn't anything, because I'm like, well, why is it that way in your country? And we're not banning. It's a 120-day
ban.
120-day ban from this, not a permanent ban. You can, whatever you want to say. It's a temporary ban. It's 120 days. It's 6 months until the country, they don't feel comfortable with the vetting process. We're going to talk about stories today, how now in France there's a rise now that, you know, there's a good chance that France may be one of the candidates that's running to run France. Yeah, feels similar as England does, and they're not happy with the situation over there based on all these people coming in.
There's actually a really interesting article that I read that we'll get to in that section, that it's like the difference between Muslim, I guess, morale in Europe versus the United States, and how different, like, that's why, like, you see a lot of things happening in Europe versus United States, because it's not as easy for them to assimilate for some reason.
Really?
Over there. Yeah.
It's not easy
to
assimilate.
It was an interesting article, yeah.
That'd be interesting.
Not as easy. I don't know if it's not easier. Yeah. It is or it isn't, but I mean, because a lot of Muslims in America are like, why are you singling me out? Like, I'm a normal American. Everything is fine here.
I saw a report
that's
that...
why a lot of people feel that way, too.
I saw a report that somebody in Detroit, or there were certain parts in certain cities in the state, they were going around saying, look, there's this area that's growing mostly Muslim in these areas, whatever. Yeah.
It's been for years.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, look, it's like they used to say that the people used to say the same thing when... Like Queens, you just have a lot of Asian people. You know, there's parts of Queens that would just turn into Chinatowns and stuff. And you're like, you know, but there wasn't like they want to push their own particular laws or anything like that. They're just working. They're assimilating in there. They're business people. They have their houses. They have companies and businesses. So who cares if I walk down the street and there's a faux place and an Asian market? And, you know, no one cares about that. But is there a difference that, you know, somebody all of a sudden sees Islamic stuff and it causes a fear as opposed to what, you know, is it right? Now, you know, I don't know. We're going to look into that.
I think that's why it's important to stay open to everything, because if you feel like you're accepted and open to things if you're accepted and people are accepting of you and you assimilate well into society, you don't feel hatred towards where you live or the people around you or any. I mean, like, it was a really fascinating article about like how people in Europe are not as accepting, but in America, everyone has been accepting. So,
well, yeah. So Europe, and this is one of the issues that has always come about, is the fact that, you know, European countries have always been very homogenous. You know, Germans lived in Germany.
The British
lived in Britain. Yes. You know, the Spanish lived in Spain. America was never like that. America was always this melting pot of immigrants that all came together. So yes, that is true about, I mean, my dad's girlfriend is French, and, you know, she has told me many stories about, you know, how different people are treated differently over there, because you have the French and then you have everybody else. So, you know,
like, even Americans are disrespected. You're an American in France, they're disrespectful to you and everything like that. So,
well, I mean, you know, that gets a little bit overblown, I think. But I think, you know, it's like when, you know, people from overseas say, oh, Americans are, you know, so brash and rude. You know, like, you're always going to have that kind of, you know, stuff.
But the point is that most European countries are less tolerant of outsiders. It's true that it's always been that way. We're known for the opposite.
So, you know, that's why there is this difficulty in assimilating in different, and especially in the smaller countries, because they're very relegated to certain areas. You know, they don't have the same types of protections. People don't have the same types of protections in, like, they do in this country, where it's, well, you can't discriminate on who you rent your place to because of, you know, their religion or their race in this country. It's against the law. It's not against the law in other places.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, the tendency to keep all of the Muslims in one, you know, specific area.
Well, that's not like a law in France, or I know like in a lot of Scandinavian countries, they're a little more particular about stuff like that.
In France, they are too, though. Even though it's one of the most densely populated, like, well, for Muslims, like, it is one of the most densely populated places. But like, they also have like very, like, I don't know, it's not like in their law or whatever, but like the Muslims live here. Like, and it's, you know, it's not like written or anything, but like it's very, very much like, oh, go over there to your spot of town. And it's caused a lot of angst and a lot of like anger and, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Listen, I'm not French, you know. So I don't know. I mean, they have their own belief system. They have mm-hmm. the way it is. Who am I as an outsider to question how they do it? That's for them to think about. That's for them. You know, I in this country, we feel our own way. I'm not going to project my thoughts onto another group or another people. You know, they're going to do what they're going to do. You know, but hey,
no, I don't think that's what we're talking. I think what we're talking about is why there's a difference in how people feel as an outsider coming to this country versus how they feel in going to other countries such as Europe. Right. And there's a big disparity between that for that exact reason.
So I said this on the show, and we're gonna take a break here to go to segment two. But I had said this on the show that if this ban continues past 6 months and it's going and perpetuates, then I have an issue with it. Okay, I just don't have an issue with it right now because I think it's a security issue, and I feel like there should be something done to loosen it, to get certain things down and do what they need to do to check the process, get it done quick, and make sure you feel comfortable with the vetting process. And let's, as people come here, make sure they're vetted, and that's it. Like it's always been, when people want to come to this country, you want to be a citizen, you have to go through a process. That's it. They go through the process. I don't give a fuck where they're from. They can get in the country as long as they go through the process. That's it. That's all there should be. Anyway, this is the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. I'm here with Talia Brahms.
Good morning, everyone.
And John Levine.
I'm going through the process.
He's going through the process. And we'll be back with segment two right after this.
This is Talia Brahms with the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show, giving you your daily dose of feminine energy and making sure these guys don't kill each other.
Yeah, welcome back to the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. Nothing to do to save. Yeah, welcome back to the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. Here with Talia Brahms.
Good morning, guys.
And John Levine from our Atlanta studios.
Yep, up here in Atlanta.
And the losing town of Atlanta.
Yep.
Ooh.
That was rough.
That was a little...
They lost. They choked. But good season either way. It's kind of hard to say that. Like, good season. You know, you made it to the... I bet none of those guys are thinking that.
No, of course not. You know what they say? You don't win the silver, you lose the gold.
That's right. What I thought was funny... I saw this story, but I guess there was a group or a newspaper that kind of had one of these Dewey moments. What are you calling it? Dewey defeats Truman
that on,
moment.
Facebook, right?
Yeah, there was. Yeah. The Boston Globe has a Dewey defeats Truman moment. Most people thought that the Falcons had beaten the Patriots, including the leading newspaper in Boston. The early edition of the Boston Globe declared victory for the Falcons, which they had a headline, Bitter End. And they had one of the players from the Patriots on his all fours as he watched I guess that was when the guy caught the interception and ran it back for the touchdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Alford. And...
Although, if you think about it, that would probably be a pretty good strategy to get to sell newspapers. Because everyone's running out to buy that paper.
That's right. Mm. And the newspaper industry needs to do whatever they can.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, they're probably sitting there going, let's just print a fake headline that it makes it look like we screwed up and everyone's going to run out and buy it.
Yeah, it says inevitably a collector's item. The erroneous conclusion proves the danger of declaring any sporting event to be over before it is.
Well, they do that a lot with old elections too. Or not even old.
Yeah.
Don't they print out both, and they just send out whatever happened?
Remember when all those fans left the Miami Arena when the Heat were in the playoffs and they thought they were going to lose and then they couldn't get back in after that, Ray, what's his face, hit the three-pointer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was funny. I was there at that game and we were getting, it was like so heartbreaking. And then we got up like we were going to leave. And then we were like, and I was just sitting, there's something I held back. I was like, and I was just watching it on TV. I stayed inside and I watched it. I was just, hold on a second. I was watching it. And then my wife went to the bathroom before we left. And, whenever we do a long drive home back to the, and then I'm watching. I'm like, let's go back. She goes, what? I go, let's go back. Because they started, I said, we went back to our seat and we watched the game. It was,
nice.
But thousands of people walked out. I mean, they walked out and they were trying to get back in. But once you walk out.
Oh, if you're a real fan, you don't walk out regardless.
Yeah.
Well, this is also Miami.
That's yeah, true. So no
Miami
one.
Miami fans.
That applies to no one then.
Well, here was the funny part about this. Brady's jersey was stolen. And here's the story. Lieutenant Governor asked Texas Rangers to help in search for Brady's jersey. Talk about a collector's item.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, yeah, it probably would go to Canton. It would, you know what I mean? The Hall of Fame. So, you know, that could be an even bigger deal.
Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has asked the Texas Rangers to help Houston police in finding Tom Brady's missing jersey. It was reported after the Patriots' Super Bowl win that the quarterback suspected his jersey was stolen from the team's locker room. Says he knew where he put his jersey and it was gone. It was right here. I know exactly where I put it, Brady said as he called the security staff and team equipment managers to assist in the search. Now, I don't know how many people are probably in that locker room.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's credentialed media. I was just trying to think of that. You've got the team people, like the equipment people and that kind of stuff. You got the players. You got the coaching staff. And then you've got, like, credentialed media. Okay, so anybody that's covering the game.
Right.
I mean, there's no fans or anything like that. I mean, there's security guards and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's a very – because I've been – like, I was in the Marlins clubhouse when they won the World Series. Like, that kind of thing. It's very tightly controlled of who gets in and who doesn't. Mm.
Still, there's got to be someone that hates their job in there that doesn't really care if they get fired and is just like, whatever.
Well, here's the other thing, though. I mean, first of all, you really can't authenticate it. You know what I mean? Like, that would be pretty easy to fake.
Yeah.
And who are you going to sell it to? I mean, it's not like you can put it up on eBay.
Well, you probably could get it authenticated. There's enough photos of him.
I don't underestimate criminals. I feel like they'll find a way.
But I mean, think about it. I mean, you could buy a Brady Super Bowl jersey, you know, like the game, you know, the game official jersey, and then, you know, look at all the photos and, like, put a grass stain here and put a, you know what I mean? Like, I mean,
maybe people in this person's network that knows what he does.
Well,
and...
let me.
But outside of that,
let me put a little information here that you don't know what you don't know. All the jerseys that are worn have certain tags in them. They have a certain, there's something in them that only the teams know that they're that. Only NFL knows, in a sense. So unless it's a real inside job, you can always authenticate a worn jersey versus a replica or one that's
so then
even...
So that was my point. So how are you going to sell it? Well, because the only way to get it authenticated is to go to the team.
Well, that's the thing. The guy even Kraft, the guy said, well, it's going to show up on eBay at some point. Let's find out, you know, who the fuck has it. And if it is, in fact, the actual one, they got their criminal, unless it was purchased or bought a few times. You know, someone could say, hey, I bought it from somebody for 10 grand. You know, I'm selling it for 20. You know, well, who was it? I don't know. Some guy on fucking, you know, some guy.
If you're sending somebody 10 grand, you know who it is.
You would hope. You would think. Somebody on Twitter, because I tweeted it, I said, the Patriots stole the victory. Stole the Super Bowl from the Falcons, and somebody stole Brady's jersey. You got a bunch of retweets on that stupid thing. And some people, Dougie Dangerous, by the way, but some people said some guy said, no, they found that it was an equipment guy had it. And that doesn't seem to be true at this point. So I don't want fake news on my Twitter feed. Yeah. So, yeah, let's say it's almost like when you steal like a real big diamond and you really can't fence it. You really can't get rid of it. If you steal something that's worth billions and millions of dollars, where are you going to take it? You're going to take it to the fucking local pawn store?
Yeah, what legitimate buyer is going to be like, great, and then just buy it.
Next thing you know, the FBI and, you know, the world police show
up. Well, I mean, if you think about it, like, you know, you've got like art thieves, right? They steal these priceless works of art and then they sell them to like private collectors who just want it for their collection because they just want to own it. You know what I mean? I don't think that applies in this case because I've never met a fan of the New England Patriots that can keep their fucking mouth shut. So
they got big mouths. So that's, by the way, send your cards and letters to johnlevine.com, all our Boston fans out there. I just thought that was funny because what you got it, you know, I mean, like you said, it's one of those things like now it's news. Mm-hmm. What sports fan in this country doesn't know that shirt was stolen?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like somebody's saying, I got the shirt. And I'm like, great. And he's going to call somebody because they're going to be that pissed. Because unless you're a Falcons fan, you're like, you're going to have it and like, great. And you're going to burn it and, I don't know, have a ritual behind it. I don't know.
Cry over the mist.
Yeah.
I doubt there would be a Falcons fan in the Patriots locker room after the game.
Well, you know, But that's it. Like you said, you wonder, you know, it had to be somebody. Somebody said, you know, this thing's going to be worth something. Like, that's happened with footballs, game balls. Somebody stole it and they got it back and stuff like that. But, hey. Well, I hope they find it. Do you think, all right, who thinks is going to turn up in the next week? Anybody want to guess?
To get the Texas Rangers involved, I mean, I could see this being a pretty, you know, well-run criminal investigation.
Yeah, and they said that they're ready. They already have leads. They're ready.
Yeah, I mean,
there's
cameras all over that fucking stadium. Yeah. I mean,
they're working on it. Those people are pretty good at what they do. I mentioned earlier in the first segment, but this is a segment to a pretty important story. You know, we're dealing with the Brexit. You know, where the United Kingdom, England, has pretty much voted. The people voted to get out of the euro, and they did it because they're not happy with the immigration situation. That was a big part of why Brexit exists. People basically didn't want to lose their country. I mean, isn't that pretty much the basis of what Brexit was all about, John?
Well, that was one of the points of what they were doing. Right. They were a little tired of the European Union kind of dictating what they can and cannot do.
Right.
And they felt it was affecting their economy. And it was, I mean, but immigration was certainly a large part.
It was a big part. And you know, it was always interesting to me that out of the euro, the English were the only ones that kept their own currency. Because to me, it was almost like, you know, they said, nah, we're going to be part of this euro, but we're still going to keep the English pound, which, you know,
right.
They didn't want to get into that aspect, which caused a little bit of thing in the banking finances. You always got the transition of it, which if this is the case. Now, France's Le Pen launches election bid with vow to fight globalization. You know, here's the thing. Do you think the euro is going to stay together here, John?
The European Union, you mean?
Yeah. You think it'll survive?
Yes.
It was an interesting experiment, you know, that's had its challenges with having, you know, it's pretty much funded. Most of the European Union is funded by Germany, number one. It was England and then France and then everybody else within that area.
Yeah, but you also have to remember, you know, the biggest part of the European Union, I mean, there was two big parts. There was you could travel between countries without having to needing a visa or passport. You know what I mean? And really the biggest part was the single market. You could sell into all of these countries without having to go through, you know, all the hoops. I mean, it used to be a nightmare to try if Germany wanted to sell something to France, you know, if you had a short store in Germany and that kind of thing. So, you know, and that's the biggest issue that Britain is now facing is the fact that the European Union is saying, well, fuck you. You want it out. So you no longer have access to the single market. And good luck selling your goods to all these other countries individually.
Hmm. Well, he kind of stayed on a standoff. There will be something, but there will be something negotiated because they're not going to want to not include it. Because on the other end, you know, that's what trade's about. You know, so these other countries aren't going to say the euro. This is where the tension begins because the euro, the European, you know, community, the people that are in the euro are saying, oh, you know, well, you can't. But at the same time, you know, they want to keep England as one of their, you know, the same thing with them. You know,
well, so you're not barring English goods from the marketplace, but now they're going to have to go through taxes and tariffs and negotiate things with individual countries, which is going to make, you know, England's goods much more expensive in the marketplace. So, you know, that is going to have a fairly, you know, would usually have the effect that you would think that it would
much
have.
More expensive. We'll have to see. That's a determinant on your part. The more expensive, probably. The real question would be what kind of negotiations occur between the European Union and England. Now, the issue will be what France will do, because now there's a lot of people that think France will wants to get out of the union. France's far-right party leader Marine Le Pen on Sunday told thousands of flag-waving supporters chanting, "This is our country," sounds familiar, that she alone could protect them against Islamic fundamentalism and globalization if elected president in May. So,
for where?
In France. And it's interesting that, I don't know, I just find it interesting that this isn't just something we're going through. It's something that other countries are going through.
Well, everybody's tapping into the same fear.
Well, I mean, here's the point. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Are people fearful because there is something to fear, or are people fearful because of nonsensical hyperbole or something? You know, I mean, that's
communism
obvious.
Was a big fear.
That's
that
obvious.
They, you know, it was used to motivate people. Now it's Islamic terrorism. I mean, they're always using something
there's a
to
lot
keep
of
people in line.
There's a lot of people that you know, from everything that's happened, all the attacks that have happened, the growing, you know, complaints. And like I said, I have a client that lives in Cologne, Germany, and she's a retired doctor, and her son lives there. She lives here in Miami, but she goes back every few months, and she says it's terrible.
Really?
It's horrible. She says it's very bad. That it's not, like you said, they're not assimilating. And whoever the purpose is, they're not. And this isn't, now, if you look at something like that that's occurring, it's an issue. It's an issue with these countries, and it's not going to get any better. And
yeah, but why do you think, or not necessarily you, but why do people think that just stopping immigration is going to stop terrorism?
I don't think it's going to stop terrorism. I think what these countries are doing is we don't want to lose control. We don't want it to get worse. They're saying there's issues that are occurring from this, and we don't want it to escalate. So they're trying to stop it or change something about it.
It's difficult because I understand a lot of the reasons why people would like Donald Trump, but his execution and his delivery on everything is wrong. Like this ban is not going to do anything except perpetuate hate towards the United States.
I don't know if that's, well, I think there's hate. People don't like that. And, you know, this is a country that we bring, you know, bring us your weak, weary and all that stuff. And I understand that as well. But, you know, it's a temporary.
As long as you're not Muslim.
Right. I mean, from the seven countries which have been proven to be shitholes that terrorism is
proven to be right. Shitholes.
That have been filtered through.
The terrorists who have attacked our country aren't from those countries.
No, that there are a few. Well, you can't. The San Bernardinos.
From
the
Egypt.
San Bernardinos.
No. We're talking about people that have come from overseas to attack this country.
Right. And
that hasn't happened since 2001.
Those people. Go back because she was. She was in, I want to say the word, but she came, she got married, he brought her over here as a wife. He went there, brought her here as a wife, and she got radical through him. So, listen, and if anybody, it'd be foolish. Here's the real issue. Anybody would be foolish to think that members of ISIS and these radical Islamic terrorists, it'd be foolish to think that their game plan wouldn't be to filter people through this process. It is happening. For anybody to say that it's not happening, it is happening. I saw something very interesting too, because not now they're not getting through. But I
mean, these are the most scrutinized people that we have that come in through the immigration system.
But they're still,
people say that oh, we're going to do some more vetting. Like, we're not doing any vetting. Of course we are.
There's a vetting process, but they wanted us. They want to take a look at it.
It's a 3-year thing. I mean, why right? would, if ISIS wants to attack this country, why would they say, okay, let's start today. In 3 years, we'll get around to the attack. I mean,
well, because what they were saying is because there was before in the previous administration. They were gonna do this process, but there was, like, they still didn't trust the vetting system. So somebody didn't trust it. That's why this came up. Could have been done differently. Yeah. Was it a shock to the system? Yes. But the guy said he was gonna do it, and he did it. Like I said, if this thing extends past 120 days, then there's an issue. Then if you're saying that's an issue,
what do you do at that point? Well, let's say it's done.
All right. So what happens after 120 days if all of a sudden the ban is finished? They've checked the system. They checked it and they've done some things. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, the Homeland Security, and I have a friend that works at the airport. He's a BSO officer. But some of the things they did, and it's not talked about much. But they did things to try to find, like, in other words, new ways of trying to find terrorists. Like, they looked at social media when the people that were there, they were able to, they checked certain things. There was other things that were done, which can be tests themselves of ways to protect from somebody entering this country. So, so whether or not something's benefited from it or not, but if after 120 days, if they say, okay, that's it, the ban is lifted, you know, we're back to normal.
Yeah, but what was done during that 120 days?
Well,
that's the question.
Well, what was done
that couldn't have been done if we didn't have a ban?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm just saying that, like, at some point they're saying, that's not my point. My point is that after the 120 days, if they said, okay, we looked at it through a fine tooth, if a new boss comes in, new administration comes in, the other people, they want to see how it's done. They want to check, whatever. Good. So now that it's in place. Okay. So my point is after 120 days, okay, we're done. We'll open the doors as it was before. Is everything back to normal then, in a sense? Or are people going to say, okay, look,
because the damage has been done. The reputation of our country is, you know, this is patently anti-American. I mean, in this country, this country was founded on basing individuals on their own merits.
Right.
Okay? And not as groups. We don't we look at a person and what that person does, we make a judgment on that person. This country was not founded on going, well, all of that group is bad. And that's what this is doing.
Right. Yeah. So my point is that, like anything, what I'm saying is now it's already done. It doesn't matter what changes at this point. It's done. So after the 120 days, if it's over with, that's it. So I don't buy that. I think people are going to be forgetful. But after this
people
is done,
here might be forgetful. People overseas are looking at this and saying,
I can assure you that the people overseas that were going to come here, they're still going to want to come here. They're still going to do what they're going to do.
I'm not saying
that's
like going to
be passed. My point is after the 120 days, people are going to lighten up and they're not going to carry on a grudge.
You mentioned that there's countries that won't let a Jewish person in. Okay,
right.
We always stood on the moral high ground of saying, well, we're not like you. We're not. That's the difference. That's why America is exceptional.
How many countries?
And now we're not.
How many countries?
We've gone down to their level.
Right. How many countries? How many countries don't let Jewish people in it?
I don't know. I have no
idea.
Well,
of course, but they're all Muslim countries.
You said that.
No, they're all Muslim countries. They're all Muslim countries that don't. Out of the seven, there's about 22 countries that do not let Jewish people in. I know you said that 3,000 fucking times, John. But my point is that, you know, we're not going to do it perpetually. We're not just saying this is it. They're saying we're going to test it. We're at war in a sense with radical Islam. So they're going to, for the safety of the country, this is what's being done. After the 120 days, they said we're done. Let's go back to it. I think after that's said and done, it'll be over. That's it. I don't think it's going
to
be.
People that really needed to get into the country will hold that grudge, I feel like.
There's some people already coming in, and now the current administration is looking at other things with people with green cards and other visas. They're going to say they're going to push them through the system within the 120 days. You know, like now with the pressure.
Well, it's not even going on. It's been lifted. I mean, that's the whole thing.
Well,
the ban is not in place currently. I mean, we're back to the way it was being worked, you know, being done prior to the ban. So, and now it's in the court system. So, you know, that there's nothing going on right now. But the bottom line is that now other countries that we've always looked down upon and scolded for doing things not the way we do them can say, well, fuck you. Dougie, you talk about hypocrisy all the time. This is hypocritical.
Right. And so that's what I'm saying. I don't really care. When it comes down to it, those countries are still going to want to come to America and do what they're going to want with America. It's not going to be an issue.
It's obviously.
I don't care about what's okay or not okay. I'm just saying that's the way it is.
You can't stand hypocritical.
No, I'm saying I understand it. I believe as American, like that's what we're here for. I don't think that a pause in this situation where they were going to try to do it, I don't find it as, I'm not outraged about it because I see it as a way of protecting national security. And other, if you don't see it, I do see it that way because I think there could be a way that they could be ISIS members using these thousands, these 10,000 fucking people that are going to come in, the Syrian refugees particularly. I feel that they could be in there. So why not make sure they're vetted? Do what you can.
What if a Muslim person comes from France, or what if a Muslim person comes from Canada, or
for some reason, President Obama felt these seven countries and our national security system felt that these countries are the ones we're going to look at, and that's what's being looked
at. Identified them. They didn't do anything. You know what I mean?
Right. I didn't say they did anything. I said they identified these countries as where terrorism breaches through and pushes through.
This is
the highest risk. It was his. He pointed out the seven. He didn't put the ban. I didn't say Obama put the ban on, John. I didn't say I said that he picked these countries as the most dangerous countries that where terrorism breaches through and comes through and is at a risk.
Not going to ban people from those countries.
No, he didn't. But they did, right? They did with Iraqi for a little while. Some people, when we're at war, which I agree with, if you're at war with a country, you got to have a ban on people coming in the country from this country, from that country. So I wouldn't. Why would anybody feel bad about that? So nobody hum and hawed about it. But because it's the current administration, it's all racist. I'm going to move on to another story before we go to break. Grandmother dressed as a witch while terrorizing, physically abusing her 7-year-old granddaughter. Now, this is my citizen of the day. Can you imagine this woman? You got to hear this. An Oklahoma grandmother pleaded guilty to child abuse last week after cops say she terrorized and physically harmed her young granddaughter while dressed as a witch. It's one thing to be authoritative, but I'm going to fucking put a mask on. This woman put her
this
in the garage.
Taking it to the next level.
She put her in the garage. She malnourished, didn't feed her, made her sleep on an old pair of jeans, no bed. You talk about having a bad pillow. Genevieve Robinson, 51, entered her plea Thursday in Oklahoma City courtroom. Says that Robinson came in because the daughter came in complaining that she couldn't control the girl anymore. When she was examined, police said the girl was found to be malnourished, burned, and bruised.
Yeah, to me, after hearing all that, the witch costume is the least of my concerns.
While dressed as Nelda, cops say Robinson committed many abusive acts, including pinching the girl with pliers, kicking her so hard in the pubic area that she fractured her pubic bone, and cut the girl with scissors, among other allegations.
Jesus.
She withheld food for the girl, kept her out of school, and failed to treat her ringworm, and forced her to sleep outside with the dogs.
That's how you get ringworm.
Yeah. What a person. Now, I would gladly have this person be sent to Somalia and somebody from Somalia take her spot. Just replace her with somebody from there.
And you're absolutely correct, Dougie, and that's fantastic because we just judged her on her merits. But we're not saying all people from Oklahoma should be sent to Somalia.
Well, you got to go to Oklahoma, John, and judge for yourself.
You got
to
feel the Oklahoma.
Yeah, you got to go there, John, because, you know, I'm not surprised.
I'll meet you there.
Yeah. Anyway, this is the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. I'm here with Tanya Bronze.
Yep, I'm still here, guys.
John Levine.
Who's booking a trip to Oklahoma.
And we're going
to
come back with Straight from the Headlines right after this.
Hey, this is John Levine, and you're listening to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show, where I'm not always right, but Dougie is always wrong.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show.
And now, for your dining and dancing pleasure, some international and domestic news you may or may not believe. It's Straight from the Headlines with Dougie Almeida.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. It's time for Straight from the Headlines, where we talk about things from around the world and make fun of it. These are funny stories, not real stories that are pitiful or ridiculous.
Yes. We're now entering the lighter
lighter side of the show, right? Where
well,
we actually, you
depends.
Know.
Depends.
Depends. Unless we bring up a thing about
not
religion.
Not a high bar to cross.
Now, every city has, like, these aquariums, like these big, like, a lot of cities you go to, they have, like, oh, we have this major aquarium you got to go see, right? Chicago Aquarium euthanizes more than 90-year-old lungfish. I don't know, whales and stuff. But do you think a fish could be that old?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, why not? Like, turtles are, like, 200 years old.
Well, hate to bring up evolution again, but... Yes,
well,
based
no,
on that.
That's why God made it.
An Australian lungfish that entranced visitors to Chicago's Shedd Aquarium for more than 80 years has been euthanized due to old age, the popular tourist attraction announced on Monday. Granddad, who was four foot long and weighed 25 pounds, had stopped eating and started showing signs of organ failure.
Yeah.
He was euthanized.
It's like you put down a dog, yeah.
Yeah. Euthanized on Sunday. Because it's a necropsy, which is an animal autopsy, found conditions consistent with old age, an aquarium official said. Imagine.
I'm glad we're on the lighter part of the show.
Well, to me, I didn't know the aquarium was around, I mean, that long. Just the aquarium itself.
Yeah, but, dude, 90 years ago was like the 1950s.
They acquired him from Sydney Aquarium in Australia during the 1933 collecting expedition, and Graddad was one of the lungfish that attracted visitors during that year. Wow. Robert Verner, spokesman of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, said nonprofit group is unaware of any older fish kept by a zoo aquarium that it accredits in the U.S. or other 8 countries. They said the granddad lived a pretty relaxed life, enjoying interactions with us, including gentle pats along his back, and loved to eat his leafy greens. Oh, that's too bad for granddad.
That's why I lived to 90. He was eating
exactly.
All that kale.
Yeah. Getting back to our Pats owner, this was a funny story that came up with all this. You know, the Pats owner, Mr. Kraft, has 5 rings. Well, he has 4 because Putin stole one. I remember the story from when he was in Russia and he visited Putin.
Mm-hmm.
And Vladimir Putin says, "Let me see that ring. It's nice. Let me see it." And he put it on his hand. He was like, "Oh, great." And then they talked a little bit and Kraft put his hand back out like, "Okay, I'll take the ring back." And they people got around Putin. "Oh, we got to go. Let's leave." And they left.
He took
the ring.
It.
Yeah. Of the five Super Bowl rings Robert Kraft has earned as an owner of the New England Patriots, one of them has an unlikely owner, Russian President Vladimir Putin. Kraft took part in a recent NFL Network series of interviews about Super Bowl rings and retold the story about his ring from the 2005 Super Bowl 39. He says he was on a trip to Russia later that year when he showed the ring to Putin. Kraft says Putin put on the ring and didn't give it back. Looks good on my hand. That's where it stays. A Putin spokesman said in 2013 that the ring was a gift and the Russian leader would send Kraft a replacement if he wanted. I give you a ring of the borscht eating contest.
This isn't the worst Russian accent ever. I'm pretty surprised.
The spokesman says, why don't you try an accent there before you start popping off there, girly.
Hey,
the spokesman says Kraft's ring is on display.
She was complimenting you, moron.
Yeah. I know. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Somewhere in the shows this weekend.
I know. Thank you very much, girly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Girly whirly. And that's a nice ring, too.
So do you think what really happened was Kraft was like, look, Putin, I'll give you this ring, but you got to get my buddy Donald Trump elected president, all right? Not now, a couple years from now, but here you go.
Yeah, a few years from now, this guy's going to run for president. I want you to really help out.
He's my buddy. Can you help him out?
We're gonna
convince Clinton to be corrupt and do all these things so that you can catch her doing those things, and then the American public will blame you on the election because we exposed her for what she actually did.
Just fish her into it years in advance. Aw,
Dougie still thinks that's fake. That's awesome.
Yeah. What's fake?
That the Russians didn't meddle in our elections.
I'm at this point, whether they did or didn't, they exposed her for who she was. So I'm happy I'm not going to kill the messenger on that one. You know?
I don't know what that means, but okay.
You don't know what that is? Don't shoot the messenger?
Yes.
You don't know what that means?
What that means.
Wait a minute. I just want to let everybody know that he just called me a fucking moron. Okay.
Well,
no, because you in the past, John, have said you get to name calling and stuff like that. But everybody already said that when it comes down to name calling, you're the first one to call the names. Just want to let you know that.
I am. I will call everyone who's a fucking moron a fucking moron.
All right. Well, keep calling me a fucking moron. Here's my new thing. Anybody who calls me a fucking moron when I see them will get bitch slapped till they hit the floor. How's that one? Is that a good one?
I think you're going to do it.
All right.
I think you talk tough, but you won't do it.
All right. Well, I won't. It's like hitting a retard. I wouldn't want to hit a retard.
Ah, see? I already backed out of it.
Yeah.
Just so everyone knows, he just called John a retard.
Well, he called me a fucking moron. I think a retard's not that far off the
moron, retard, and girly.
Hold on to Don't Flush Super Bowl could harm sinkholes. There was actually a town that during the Super Bowl, they have a bad sinkhole. They said, listen, we got a bad sinkhole, so if you take a big dump or take a piss, all the beer, don't flush. Could you imagine?
Nope.
In Fraser, Michigan, a giant sinkhole in suburban Detroit is being threatened by the Super Bowl. Macomb County Public Works Chief Candace Miller is worried that thousands of football fans will flush toilets at halftime Sunday night. She tells radio station that it could overwhelm a broken sewer line blamed for the sinkhole. Miller says,
enjoy the Super Bowl, but not your toilet bowl.
Yeah, go piss outside. Miller says her bathroom advice sounds crazy, but she fears trouble unless people are willing to hold it. Or at least not immediately flush. Now, I'll say this, like for saving water, when it comes to our bathroom and our bedroom, our bedroom bathroom,
mm-hmm.
we don't always flush like when we go pee.
What?
That's gross.
Yeah, sometimes we'll just, you know.
My ex-boyfriend used to do the same thing and I was super into him, so I was like, oh, that's kind of weird, but whatever. But, like, it's disgusting.
Oh, why? It's in the water. Yeah. I mean, it's not like.
Because it smells the room up there's bacteria just sitting there.
It's in water. It's in a porcelain bowl.
Poop
is in water too, but it smells up the bathroom.
But when we poop, we flush. I'm just saying, you know.
But saying that just because it's in water doesn't make it smell. Of course, I could tell if somebody goes to the bathroom and pee.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We're not doing that in our guest bathroom. We're not doing it in our main bathrooms that people come in and out of.
That doesn't make it less disgusting because you're the only person.
Well, we just don't flush all the time. We're conservative. We're not going to waste water.
We got a restrictor
on blah, 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 John. Thanks. Yeah, we got all that.
Well, do you guys like at least like exercise like smell discretion? Like if it's
fine,
whatever.
Yeah, well, of course.
Whatever.
I mean, yeah, if it's like we just ate cabbage or something, we're flushing the toilet, you know. I'm just saying that sometimes, you know, we're trying to be like environmentally, you know. I could deal with a little bit of piss smell.
If you had like 4 gallons of water in the span of 2 hours and it was fine. All right. Yeah.
I'm telling you.
I get it.
We're trying to save water. We're trying to be, you know, we're just trying to, I'm just saying, Yeah, that's something we've done. It's not like we piss all day in it, you know. Oh, now it's time, you know. We,
well, that's what I'm
if
saying.
If I go to the bathroom, I don't just flush it. I know my wife's gonna go to the bathroom in the morning, and she'll go in there, and then she'll flush. You know what I'm saying? It's not like we just flush it every time we fuck a pee in there.
If it's a hydrated piss, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, well, that just drink a glass of water before we go. So let's see. Okay. Well, yeah. So I think there was no sinkhole, so they're okay. I guess people held it. Newest New York casino has 2K slots, 77 table games, and one cemetery. That's what you want in a casino.
Oh, it's in the casino.
Well, just saying. This is the headline. Straight from the headlines. That's what the headline says.
Oh, thank you for bringing that down.
The newest New York casino has 2,000 slots, 77 tables, games, and one cemetery. In Tyree, New York, New York State's newest casino has 2,000 slot machines, tables, blah, 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 and a cemetery. The Las Vegas-style Del Lago Resort and Casino opened Wednesday in Cayuga County, town of Tyree, T-Y-R-E. I'm assuming that's how it's pronounced. The developer, Rochester-based Will Morit, had to build the casino's parking lot around an old family cemetery containing the graves of people who farmed the surrounding land generations ago.
That's
you ever see
dark.
The people that are in a casino like on a Wednesday afternoon? They're not far from the cemetery.
I just said they should fucking put tombstones above those guys' heads. The people that sit there as those slot machines all day.
The afternoon slot machines is what deserves the pre-tomb.
People who live nearby tell the news that the descendants, the decedents of those buried in the small cemetery didn't want
descendants
disturb during construction. Town officials say the casino plans to build a fence around the cemetery and make it accessible to the families who love ones. Hey, let's go see mom and dad and then go play some blackjack.
Isn't that what you do after you see dead loved ones?
Yeah, I feel bad. Like, I haven't really gone and seen my parents in a while.
Are they both deceased?
Yes.
Oh.
No, I just put them in a cemetery because they're alive.
You just play blackjack for
Yeah. I'm going to go play, you know. It's weird, you know, when you think about it. Like, on birthdays, Christmas, we'd go, but it's like, you know, somebody was, oh, it was a different story.
Well, I went to the first funeral in my entire life a few months ago. It was for my grandma, and it was an open casket.
Yeah.
And she had her makeup done, and she looked great, whatever. And then they just shoved her into a wall. So mausoleum.
A mausoleum, yeah.
And that was traumatizing. It was I have to go back. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I loved my grandma, but that was so weird. And I don't want to go back to the wall that she stuffed in.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost different if you're in the ground, kind of. Like, but I don't know.
Well, that's why I always said that I want to be cremated, because I don't want people to feel obligated to, like, have to go to a place to, you know what I mean? Like my mom died 10 years ago, and she's buried in the ground. And I have the same sort of thoughts that you do, Dougie, where it's like, oh, God, I haven't seen my mom. You know, I haven't gone there in a long time. But I think about her all the time. So to me, it's like she's always in my head.
I've never
been talk to the ground.
I've never been good. I've never been good with death. Like when I was younger, you know, like to go to the wakes and you know the viewings and stuff. My father was always like, oh, because my father when he was young, there was somebody who lifted up in the casket because they died falling asleep, you know, on a chair or something, and they had to brace the person down. But you know, in the middle of the service, he head came up and scared the shit out of him. He was like, you know,
yeah.
So it's like, you know, then he was like, oh, every somebody passed. Like when I was a little kid, he was like, oh, I don't, you know, my dad would be like, I don't really, you know, want to go. I'd be like, why is dad don't want to go? What's a big deal? And then, you know, when I was there, like, oh, you know, what are you going to do? But I never knew how to deal with, you know, it's like, how do you deal with death?
No, it's,
you know,
so weird.
What do you bring? What do you not, you know, like everything that goes along with that ritual. It's like, you know, and we had family friends that, when I was in Europe, right, the year I graduated high school, I went to Spain, and I was there for a few weeks. I went for like vacation. I went to play with practice with some team there and everything. And while I was gone, a friend of the family had passed away, and I had come home like some weeks later, like after like they had the funeral and everything, and I came back like a month later, and it was like to me, I don't know, I was like 18, you know, so I didn't think to go to the family's. You know, we spoke and this and that on the phone when it all happened. But when I didn't go running to the house, you know, to give my respects, you know what I mean? Which, you know, appropriately, like, of course, that, you know, but I'm fucking 18. So one of my cousins, supposedly, like, not really blood cousin, we knew each other since we were kids, and our family knew, like, he just didn't talk to me anymore because he was so pissed about it. I'm like, you're gonna listen. The fucking, you know, you're gonna get mad at somebody because they did that, you know. Meanwhile, these people would talk shit about our family all the time, like they were smarter. Like, you know, it was kind of like John and I. Like, you know, he thinks he's always smarter and always is. So he, like, treats me a certain way, calls me a fucking moron. So, like, these people would do the same thing with my family.
So can you stop talking to me?
Yeah. So these people would be like, you know, they would.
I was waiting for
they would
something.
Kind of talk, like, about my brothers and stuff like that right in front of me. Like, I'd be at the table. I think that's where it came from. Like, we'd be at their house, and they would talk about, oh, your brothers are this and that. Meanwhile, their kids were so much, you know what I mean? And I kind of like, fuck you people. Who the fuck you think you are? You know what I mean? So good we don't talk to them. Hey, John will like this since it's a sinning religious person. Italian priest faces defrocking. You know what that is? When you get defrocked? Italian priest faces defrocking for organizing orgies on church property. Don Andrea Conton is accused of having 30 lovers and taking trips with them to a naturist swingers resort. An Italian,
good for him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Hey, if you're going to be a priest, live it up on the weekends. An Italian priest faces defrocking after allegations were made that he organized orgies on church property. Don Andrea Conton, a priest at Padua, Italy, was accused of always carrying a briefcase full of vibrators, sex toys, masks, and bondage equipment.
Ooh.
He is also accused
I should start going to church.
Yeah.
I'm going to rethink this atheist thing.
I was about to say, maybe I've been wrong this whole time.
Hey, this religious thing.
God is good.
Hey, he is also accused of having as many as 30 lovers and taking trips with them to swingers resorts in France despite taking a vow of celibacy. I don't think he's devoting himself to that vow. The 48-year-old has allegedly concealed pornographic home videos and covers with the names of various popes. He is accused of farming out some of his lovers to men on wife swapping websites, according to the Times. He's also carried a briefcase full of all kinds of goodies, vibrator, sex toys, mask, bondage equipment. One of his accusers said in her police statement, according to the particular news, she also accused Mr. Conton of encouraging her to have sexual relations with a horse.
Nice.
And beat her in the rectory on two occasions. Well, she went back for it. You know what I mean?
Shoved it in a rectory.
Yeah. Claudio Cipolla, Padua's bishop, said Mr. Conton would lose his role regardless of the outcome of the investigation. Yeah, one less bad priest. No one cares. Just saying.
I don't know why that makes him bad, but anyway.
Well, I know, you know, he's really not supposed to. And our final story of the day, since we're talking about shoving things up our ass, a former mint worker who hid some stolen gold in his rectum is now sentenced in Ottawa, Ontario. A former Royal Canadian Mint employee who stole 22 cookie-sized pieces of refined gold by hiding them in his rectum has been sentenced to 30 months in prison. That's a golden ass.
Cookie sized, right? Is that what I said? Cookie sized?
Yeah, like coin. I'm guessing like a coin or.
Well, I mean, is it like Oreo or is it like Auntie Anne? Yeah. You know what I mean? Size. Like,
yeah, are they like a wafer cracker? Are they like a.
Yeah, I mean, like what kind of cookie are we talking about?
Is this a double stuff?
Are we talking about like a vanilla finger? Because that might go any easier.
Yeah.
I mean?
It's like one, yeah, like an Entenmann's, like, or like a, what they call the Milano? Is it like a Milano?
Listen, right. Even like a Publix sugar cookie is too much girth.
35.
A pinwheel would hurt like a motherfucker.
35-year-old Leston Lawrence was found guilty last November of stealing the pieces from the mint and selling 17 of them to Ottawa gold buyers. Hey, this gold smells a little funny. Ontario Court Judge Peter Doughty on Thursday sentenced Lawrence and ordered him to pay a fine of $145,000, which is dollars, U.S. dollars, about 190 Canadian. Doughty says, Doughty. Funny, the judge that overseen this, his name was Judge Doughty. Doughty says the stolen gold was worth $127,000 U.S. dollars. Court testimony indicated that Lawrence was involved in purifying recently procured gold and sometimes worked alone, out of sight and out of security cameras. But he was probably heard grunting and groaning.
Thank you, Doug.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I have time for here on the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. I want to thank Talia Brahms for joining us today.
This is girly.
That's right, the girly girly. And, of course, atheist John Levine, Mr.
Also known as the messenger.
The messenger.
Who is a retard? That's John.
Oh, the retard. Right, yeah. I'm the retard.
Fucking retard. Don't get it
Doug
straight.
The moron, John the retard, Talia the girly.
The girly. Yeah, that'll be it. That'll be on our meme.
It's the new Tuesday crew.
That's there the new go. Tuesday crew. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Don't forget, we have a great week of comedy coming up. Wise Guys Comedy Show. I'll be there to host, as well as our feature, Mike Cintron, and our headliner, Mike Vecchione.
Great show.
So it's pretty cool. By the way, if you're also around tonight, or I should say Tuesday night, Mike's going to be at the American Rock Bar and Grill in Deerfield. Just want to tell our good friend Randy Singer from the Black Box Theater that you can have comics work not too far away from each other and still get a crowd, you dipshit. Wednesday, that'll be the show. By the way, then Mike Vecchione and I will be at the Fort Pierce Sunrise Theater, Casey and Spaz Comedy, on Saturday night. That should be a lot of fun. And lastly, next week I'll be with Rich Voss all week at the Off the Hook Comedy Club in Naples for Valentine's Day. And then, of course, you'll be at Tavolino's in Coral Springs on Wednesday next week. So
me?
No. I just said Rich Voss.
Oh.
Rich Voss will be, you know.
You know, you pointed to me, so one would think.
I'm saying, you know, yeah. Well,
like, yeah.
Oh, by the way, guys, a big announcement. April 15th, we're going to be having a big party for me at the Funky Buddha. We're going to have two shows. It's going to be the Dougie's 50th show because it's my 50th birthday.
Oh.
So we're going to have, I don't know if we're going to set up as a roast, but you and John, if John's in town.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to have you guys on the list of comics I want on it.
15.
Cool.
And so if you're in town, and so we'll probably do it like a little bit of a roast, do a bit, do a little bit of roast, and then I'll go up and then, of course, be able to, you know, reciprocate. So stay tuned for that. That's April 15th. We'll be at the Funky Buddha with the Dougie 50th show. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. If you want more dates, go to DougieAlmeida.com. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at WakeUpDougie. You can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter at DougieDangerous. And we have a fan page on Facebook, a Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. Be sure to join us on that. And John?
JohnLevineComedy.com is where you can find all my pertinent social media information.
There you go. And Talia?
And you can follow me on social media, Talia Ron.
There you go. Thanks, guys. Tomorrow, Elgin David and Peter Leonard will be in the studio. See you here at the same spot. Take care.
People on earth, can you hear me? Came a voice from the sky on a magical night. And in the colors of a thousand sunsets, they travel to the world on a silvery light. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one. Setting fire to the sky as they landed, carrying to the world children of the sun. Children of the sun. All at once came a sound from inside. Thick beam of light hit the ground. To the door, to the world of another time. And on the journey of a thousand lifetimes,